formally welcome Aya Damodira. I've wanted to let you all meet her and hear her teaching for quite a while, and we finally made it happen. So welcome and thank you. Aya is a Theravadan nun, and I'll let you say a little bit about your experience as you begin, maybe.
Okay.
And we're fortunate to have her living in and teaching here in Colorado Springs, living in her hermitage on the west side, surrounded by a wonderful garden that she's made and a beautiful little temple, Dharma Hall, made out of a garage. And it's a really beautiful sacred space. Her community meets there, and she also teaches in other places in the Colorado Springs community. We're very fortunate. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Sarah. And thank you all for welcoming me here. This is my first time to Springs Mountain Sangha, and I've heard about it, and I've known Sarah for a little while, and it's just wonderful that I can be here with you.
Before we go too much farther, usually we gather around some kind of closer in.
Yes, please do. Please come up. Wonderful. It's nice to feel this kind of cozy one coming together. Okay, so to begin with, I'll say a few words about myself, since Sarah asked, and some of you may be curious. Where to start? I ordained as a Theravada nun in England. Originally, I had grown up in California, Southern California, got interested in the Dharma because it was something that spoke to my life experience, the difficulties I was facing at the time, and it was something that I felt that was I could apply and it worked, as opposed to something I had to believe and take on as a doctrine. So I started to meditate and go on retreats, and even though it was really hard at first, you know, both physically and mentally, I noticed that if I could just stay present with the chaos that was happening, there was a sense of refuge, a sense of, not that I could control the outcome of what was happening, but that I could be present with it more. And so I sensed there was a strength in that. And that's what led me to want to go further. So I would continue with the meditation practice. And eventually a friend told me about a monastery in England, and I went there because I wanted to know how it would feel to totally immerse myself in a lifestyle and practice. And I don't believe now that that is what we need to do, to immerse ourselves into a life of practice. I feel that everyday life is a life of practice. But at that time, it felt something I was drawn to. So I went there, and it was very orderly and predictable. You know, there were certain routines that we get used to doing, and a lot of, you know, you're doing it along with other people who are, you know, similar to you. So there, in that sense, it felt like there was some rightness to what I was doing. And I was seeing some effect in my life too. And yet also there were challenges because you're living with other human beings, right? There always will be challenges. And so I stayed there 11 years and I feel I benefited a lot. But then eventually I decided to move out of the community and I returned to America and lived in Southern California in a different monastery for a while. And then I took on the higher level of ordination called the Bhikkhuni ordination, which wasn't permitted in the Thai forest tradition. So that now I've been more on my own because I moved to Colorado Springs. I originally came to join another bhikkhuni, another nun in my tradition, and I thought I would stay for just 3 months just to visit. Well, she left and I'm still here. So life is very unpredictable. So I think that brings me up to speed here. And so tonight I was wondering before I came, I wonder what I'm going to speak about. And there were different topics and themes that I considered. And then I received an email about what you had been reflecting on in the group that meets before the passage by Bernie Glassman and the video about the baby who is exploring life with an openness and a wonder. And those ideas really encouraged me to actually do that, to actually put that into practice. So I decided rather than coming with notes, I would just show up with the don't know mind and see what happened and speak from that place. In fact, in the tradition I came through, the Thai forest tradition, it was always encouraged to just speak extemporaneously, never to have any kind of notes. But since I left there, I always have notes because I feel like I want to be prepared and I want to, you know, give something of some value and some substance to the people and, you know, have done some research and be ready. And that's one way that we feel that maybe we can meet the uncertainty of life. And sometimes it helps, and other times it, you know, you're still going to face the uncertainty. You might forget what you were going to say, or you might, you know, something else could happen. And sometimes you're so attached to your script in your head, you forget that you're actually here for the people. And so I thought I'd, you know, put that little safeguard aside and see what would happen if I could be open to the moment and practice what this teaching that was presented to some of you today from the Bernie Glassman topic, which is really about opening to the present moment. And you know, we hear this so often, it becomes very trite, you know, be present, be present, be present. And yet to do it is always a challenge because our minds want to predict what's going to happen. We get into habits, and that seems to be the way that we can feel safe. So coming into a place for the very first time is an interesting experience because, you know, at first the mind could go, well, this is different, this is not what I'm used to, and, you know, you can notice all the spinning of the wheels and what stories are going on in your mind, or you can just open to the experience of what it feels like in the body and just notice. And here in this space, I notice really the spaciousness of it. It's so much taller and you know, it's more a sense of solid. And try to think about how that space, I can use that in my own practice of feeling that spaciousness between the thoughts, between the sensations, the emotions that arise. Noticing the arising and passing of everything. And in that way, it's an immediate sense of uncertainty. And yet the refuge is in the knowing, in that not knowing in an intellectual way, but an immediate, direct experience. So in the beginning you chanted the three refuges, refuge in Buddha or awakening in Dhamma, the way things actually are, and in the community, the Sangha. And I feel that those are things that we can really reflect on in a way that is not just something to be recited. But with that Buddha, this is that quality of awakeness that knows things right here, right now, every single moment. And so as I was sitting in meditation, sometimes the mind would start to think, okay, you're going to have to say something. What are you going to say? And you know, you just start to notice, okay, there's the thoughts are arising. Maybe a sensation in the abdomen, maybe a sense of anxiety. Just notice and then relax and open to the present moment, the spaciousness, the quality of being here right now. And it's really wonderful when that can happen. So it was actually quite enjoyable to let that mind relax, to let the body relax into the way things are just right now. And it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong if anxiety or fear or whatever arises. It's not wrong, it's just what's arising. And so we can be present with that, know that just as it is. And know also the sense of connection that we are here in one place together, sharing the same breath. My vision of you is influencing me right now, your vision of me. So we are interbeing, and that's influencing this moment. The reading today also talked a little bit about this oneness, non-separation. And, the fear that comes up with uncertainty has to do very much with the sense of separation. I'm separate from you. What do you think of me? What do I think of me? That sense of being an individual is what brings up a lot of fear. Being different than somebody else, wanting to feel that connection, not sure if you will. There's a teaching that the Buddha gave in the Pali Suttas that speaks to this. And it's a story about a spiritual teacher named Bahiya. Now, he was very adept in his practice, and he had a following of people who revered him, who saw his life, and thought he was very knowledgeable and accomplished. But one day when he was sitting in meditation, he was visited by a deva, a celestial being. And that celestial being, as it says, was his relative in the past. And she said to him, you may think that you're enlightened, but you're really not. And in fact, you're not even on the right road for enlightenment either. Isn't it wonderful how our relatives can tell us these kinds of things? There's always going to be somebody in our life who will say, you think you're something special, but you're not. So as the story goes, he was like, whoa, really? And he was really taken aback, and he thought, well, is there somebody who is enlightened? Is there some way I can find out this way to enlightenment? And the celestial being said, yes, there is. There is somebody named the Buddha. They call him the Buddha. And he's staying at such and such a place right now. And so that very night, Bahiya got up, packed his bag, and took off by foot, walking like 100 miles to where the Buddha was staying. And finally, he approaches the Buddha. He sees, okay, is it this one? I think it is. He's the first one. And they were going on alms round through the street in India. And if you've ever been to India, it's chaos. And streets are just full of cow dung and potholes and people all around, and the Buddha's walking with the monks behind him, trying to get a meal for the day, as was the tradition for ascetics at that time. And Bahia comes up and says, "I want you to teach me about enlightenment. Teach me about enlightenment. Just tell me, please." And the Buddha says, "It's not really the right time for this. Could you ask me later?" And Bahia says, no, really, I really want to know now. I really want to know now." And the Buddha says for the second time, "No, this is really not the right time." But Bahia was very persistent, and he asked for a third time. And he says, "Listen, I really have to know, because life is uncertain. You may die, I may die, we just don't know." And as the tradition is, that if you're asked three times, you have to answer. And so the Buddha felt compelled to answer. Plus, the reasoning that Bahia gave is true. Life is uncertain. One never knows how long we're going to live. And so the Buddha gave this teaching in brief, a very, very succinct and pithy teaching. And he said, "Bahia, let there be in the seen only the seen, in the heard only the heard, in the sensed only the sensed, and in the cognized only the cognized." And if you practice like that, Bahia, you will see that there is no this there, and no this here, and no that there. And so Bahia went away. He said, thank you, and he went away. And he actually was gored by a cow in the street and died. So, you know, he had a premonition maybe his life wasn't going to be too long. But he got it. He got somehow that sunk in, and he was able to perceive the truth, the Dhamma, in that moment. And after his death, somebody asked the Buddha, one of the monks asked, "What happened to Bahia? Did he have a fortunate rebirth?" And the Buddha said, "Yes, actually, he got it. He was enlightened, and he was given the title of the one who obtained enlightenment the quickest." Now, I'm not suggesting that's the way we ought to go. What I want to reflect on is that teaching, that very short but powerful teaching of in the seen, let there only be the seen, in the heard, only the heard, in the sensed, only the sensed, and in the cognized, only the cognized. So what that's saying is that not that we're going to ever need to, we don't need to shut out our experience. We don't need to shut out life. We don't have to put blinders on, close our ears, not feel things, or not think about things. These are not the enemies of awakening. Sometimes we may be drawn into a path of meditation so that we can kind of come into a place that feels safe from the outside impingements, the difficulties that we may hear. And we sure know that if we turn on the news, you'll be activated. There's going to be a lot of things that are hard to not react to, right? Things that you see can cause some kind of reactivity in you. Things that we feel touched. We feel maybe even the cold or the heat, or could be various things. Could be pains in the body. You know, aches, why is my body feeling like this? The sicknesses. And then the thoughts, you know, these kind of things can be like assaulting us, and we can feel that way. You know, I came to meditation, I want to have a quiet mind. And then there's this monkey mind thing happening. You know, all these kind of thinking I don't want to be happening, and it's happening. And I thought I was supposed to get peaceful, but it seems even worse, more agitated, and worse than I thought I ever was. But this teaching shows that these are not the obstacles. These are not the problems. Just that there are things that are seen, heard, sensed, or thought about. That's not the obstacle. The obstacle is that we add something on to it. We add our judgments. We add our assessments. We add our comparisons. We add, we categorize things. We put something on top of it, which says it's good, it's bad, it's right, it's wrong. It shouldn't be. It should be. And so any situation you come into, we can notice that. We can notice what is actually really happening in this moment. And what is it that I'm overlaying? What am I adding on to this moment? Whether it's, you know, coming into a place that you've never been before and thinking, well, gosh, they do that differently. It shouldn't be like that. I've heard that chanting done different. You know, it's, you know, whatever it is, whether it's your job or your family, every day is going to be different. Life is always like that. No matter how much we want it to be predictable, no matter how much we follow patterns and say, well, maybe I'll sit in the same place because last time I was okay. I'll sit there again because maybe that's a safe spot. These are all ideas in the mind that we use to protect ourselves from the uncertainty of life. But the Buddha said that's not the way to protect ourselves because we can't change things being uncertain. There's always going to be a flux. There's always going to be, you know, curveballs being thrown at you. But what we can do is protect the mind, the quality of knowing, awareness. That's what the refuge is about, the refuge in that awakened mind, which doesn't add stories. Or if we do add stories, then we notice that. Okay, well, this is a story that's running. This is why I'm getting wound up. This is why I'm getting anxious. Usually we get anxious when we think about the future. We might be assailed by regret, or if we think about the past, or maybe anger when you think about the past or what was done. But instead, it's not to say I have to push away or suppress any of that experience, any of that emotion that might be arising. But we can know it for just what it is. If it's an emotion, say, of anger, it can seem very gripping, very compelling, but we can feel it in the body. As you breathe, where do you feel that emotion? Maybe tightness in the hands or the jaw or around the brow, or maybe in the abdomen if it's anxiety, sometimes butterflies in the stomach. Breathe in, relax and open. And return to that state of being like that infant, that child, that has never experienced this before in your life. It's just like this. And then we can have an attitude of curiosity, of openness, instead of being guarded and thinking, this is what I need to protect myself against. It's like embracing whatever arises. It can totally transform the same experience. It becomes a different experience, even though the circumstances, the conditions are the same. And so at every moment, just keep checking in. How is it right now? Our habit is that the attention goes outward. And again, that's the way we are wired. As human beings in this physical body, if we weren't wired to survive, you know, we would be not here as a species. So, you know, you don't see animals sitting meditating in the wild, right? You know, especially if they're a prey animal like a rabbit. They're not usually just sitting there and be meditating. No, they're going to be paying attention to their surroundings. And so we still have that tendency to take care of ourselves in a physical way. That's the kind of brain that stays with us, the amygdala, the fight-flight response. But by having the other parts of the brain and the capacity to wake up, we can know that when it comes. We can be aware of it and not be caught in that trap of fear, the grip. And so whether it's as we walk down the street, a street that's unfamiliar, see somebody that looks a little different, maybe a little unfamiliar to us, just notice what's arising in the mind, what's feel like in the body. At the end of the reading, I thought there was an interesting thing that Marty Glassman said as a koan. How can we in our daily life find a form that would help us in this practice of non-duality? How can, in other words, how can we live into this? How can we support each other in this practice of non-duality? Because non-duality can be a very conceptual thing, and it can be very interesting to think about it intellectually. I go to a book club on non-duality and we read different books, and after a while it sounds kind of similar, and it's like, how do we put this into practice? Well, I think that teaching that the Buddha gave to Bahia is one way, is to not add on. But another way would be to look at all of our experience as ways that we can connect more with people that aren't like us, to open wide to new experiences. So we tend to feel safe when we're with people who are like us in some way. Maybe they think like us, or they act like us, or they like the same kind of hobbies, or they do the gardening like us. You know, the more we get into our little specific areas, be it Buddhism, then the more we can see the little differences. So we might be find it very easy to like the people far, far away in a different country, and harder to like the people who are right next to us, our neighbors. But that's the challenge, I think, for us. How to live this koan of non-duality is how to not create the sense of me here and you there, because it's created. If you look at the very young babies, they don't seem to have that. It comes later. And so this process of meditation is really not a process of adding or attaining anything. It's more of a process of letting go, losing those ideas that we have held because we think they make us safe. So I have no idea how long to go.
Perfect. There's plenty of time for discussion.